Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. Good to be with you again.
It's good to be back. Today, we are discussing property management.
We are indeed.
One of the chapters in your book, Positively Geared, Lloyd, is the chapter devoted to what you call the landlord's toolkit. Now, what a lot of people may not realize is once you make the transition from homeowner or possibly not having owned property to a property investor is that you're also a byproduct of that, is that you become a landlord. Now, being a landlord is not difficult, and you know you really do spell it out in the book and give people, as you've rightly called it, the toolkit they need to sort of get up and running and to learn quickly. But we want to talk today about all things property management related. We feel it's a very important and often overlooked part of being a property investor. As a landlord, you're going to be faced with a lot of decisions to make in terms of getting the right tenants in properties, you know, repairs on properties and everything in between. Walk us through what the basic toolkit looks like.
I think the most important thing to think about first, Alex, is the fact that it actually doesn't take a lot of time to be a landlord. Now, I always get the question, you've got so many properties, it must take so much of your time to manage your portfolio. But in essence, I spend hardly any time managing my portfolio because it's outsourced to property managers. And that's one of the things that we'll discuss during this episode. But it's only when you're self-managing your properties that's going to be taking a lot of time. And that's something I generally don't recommend. So when you're outsourcing it, then it's actually been managed and providing you're buying good properties in good locations, you've got good tenants in place with good property managers, then you very much can be a passive property investor from that perspective, and you can just concentrate on growing your portfolio. But the actual having your tenants in there and all that is quite passive for you because you've got someone looking after that. I guess I'll go through, you know, what a property manager does and how you get good tenants and everything like that. But essentially, if we look at what property managers do, their main responsibilities, they source tenants for you. They can open your property for inspections. They check whether your prospective tenants are blacklisted from rental and what their histories have been like in the past. They, of course, check references for that. They collect rent on your behalf. So again, it's passive from your perspective because you're not actually having to do that yourself. And they can actually also pay your bills, which includes your council water and strata rates where applicable, from your rent monies. And then, of course, they'll then pay the balance of your money to your account each month. Property managers also conduct routine inspections. They can organise repairs and maintenance, deal with tenant concerns. And this is a really good one, is that they can actually chase overdue rent so that you're not having to do it. So again, it allows you to get on with just growing your portfolio, not having to worry about those little things.
Lloyd, when you were sort of first starting out and or even, you know, working towards midway of building your portfolio, what were the key things that you identified that you really started to look for in a managing agent?
I think one of the important things, I think, is getting a managing agent who has a property portfolio themselves, because I think you need to have someone who's got some skin in the game, that they actually understand that they're managing something that's, potentially your biggest asset. So they need to really come to grips with that. The other thing that's very important is to also ask your property manager, you know, how many properties they actually manage, how big their rent roll is, because you don't want someone who's completely overwhelmed with managing too many properties. One of the things that sometimes people get a little bit too concerned about is, how much commission they charge and everything like that. That's not solely the most important thing, trying to get the cheapest property manager. You should be looking for, the overall, whether they're charging anything above their commission, whether they're charging monthly expenses and things like that, and how much they charge for new leases and things. So you need to look at things overall, but you don't want trying to be cutting your property manager too much in terms of what you're paying them, because you actually want someone who's going to be managing your property well. I think over time, there's a few questions that I've learned to ask a property manager when I'm sourcing someone new. And I do try to use the same manager for properties that are in similar locations. Like if someone works across Sydney, then I'll use the same person to manage those, for example. But you can't necessarily use the same person to manage properties in Brisbane or Melbourne. So you do end up using a few different property managers. I think it's very important. Other questions that I'd be asking a property manager is how many routine inspections they do with your properties each year. So you're allowed to actually have up to four per year, but some actually only do two. So it's good to know how they keep track of that and how often they are doing that. And then getting back to fees that I mentioned earlier, is do they charge extra fees to organise repairs or pay rates on your behalf? Also asking them what their actual tenant screening process is like, which is something that we'll cover a little bit later on. It's also good to ask them what action they take if the tenant doesn't pay rent, because that's quite important, because what I found in my early days is sometimes you're dealing with an inexperienced property manager and they weren't quite on top of things.
And just to add my two cents worth, Lloyd, on the topic, I'm a big advocate for using a property manager. Obviously, there are some instances where self-management is okay, and we're not here to say don't do that. Once again, everything we discuss is really depending on the individual circumstances and needs at the time. However, what I've learned over the years is that, you know, a good quality managing agent, particularly a proactive managing agent, not only are they managing your property, but they're going to also keep up to speed with the rental market. So for example, Lloyd, you know, let's say that there's an area that becomes a real hotspot and there's increased demand for people want, you know, tenants wanting to live in that area. How good is it to have a landlord that can, excuse me, a managing agent that can call you up and say, hey, Lloyd, just so you know, your tenant's lease is due for renewal soon. By the way, here's a report of the last 3 months' activity in the suburb. You know, we believe that you can possibly get an increase on your return.
Absolutely, Alex. And that's one of the things that I like to see from my agents is actually an update every 6 months on what the market is actually doing. Because where possible, if you can increase your rent by $10 every 6 months or something, then that's really good. But certainly seeing what the market is actually doing and getting some advice from your property manager, they're the experts in the field. Quite often, you as a property investor might be wanting a certain amount for your property. And then, yeah, sometimes you might be asking maybe a little bit more than market value and then wondering why it's not been rented and things. So this is where you need to get a good property manager and then taking their advice on what is market value for your property. But the worst thing you can do is be renting a property for this the same amount of rent for 4 or 5 years, doing nothing about it, then finding out that you should be actually be getting $100 more a week later on than what you are, because you haven't increased your rent over time. So you actually need someone who's got their, you know, their finger on the pulse from that perspective.
It's so true, Lloyd. I find with a lot of self-managed portfolios or people who own investment properties and self-manage, that's probably the biggest commonality I find amongst them all. Typically, their properties are rented below market value. And, you know, then there's this mentality that, okay, well, the tenant's been here for a long time, so we're happy to keep them there. And look, that's fine. But that's not necessarily, once again, going back to strategy, what you need to do in order to work towards your longer term goal.
Yeah, so I hear that a lot. The tenants are fine. They've been there. They're a good tenant and all that kind of thing. But again, it's you got to run your property portfolio like it's a business. So in terms of your rent, you know, renting to a family member, for example, and charging them half, or renting to someone who's supposedly a good tenant, in inverted commas, at the end of the day, you know, if you've got a good property in a good location, then you should be able to get market rent for it. And if the tenants you've got in place don't want to pay your rent, they can move out and you can get someone to move in who will pay market rent, because at the end of the day, you're the one that's actually missing out on getting adequate income for your property. This is your retirement. This is your future that you're looking at here. So it's very important to make sure that you actually are getting adequate returns from your property here, not just thinking, oh, I've got a good tenant, so I don't want to lose them. Because if it's in, as I said, if it's in a good location, you'll be able to rent it out well at market value.
That's why it's really important that when choosing a managing agent, take the time to do your due diligence. Take the time to ask the questions you've just mentioned. A great one that you raised before, Lloyd, was, you know, how many properties do they manage? Are you going to give your property to an agency where they've got, for example, 1,000 properties on their rent roll and they've only got 2 property managers? It's never going to end well.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's happened to me. And getting back to your question about what were some of the things I was learning when I was first starting out, and I did have a property in Queensland once where I gave it to a property manager. It was a franchise, quite a well-known brand, And but it worked out that they just had way too many properties on their rent roll. They had about 500 properties across, you know, three property managers, and the property manager managing my property was actually very young. Not that that's a bad thing, but there was inexperience there, and they couldn't really cope with their demand. And there's a couple of issues with the tenants there, and they weren't really across things there. So that became a bit of an issue. The other thing I'd probably like to mention also is that when looking for a property manager, quite often property managers are seen as sort of, the poor cousins of a real estate selling agent. So sometimes it's very important to interview property managers carefully. But sometimes, you know, there are specialist property managers who actually specialize in managing properties. So not always necessarily going to the big name real estate agency who has a property management arm, which is their bread and butter, but actually going to those companies that actually don't sell property, but they actually just manage property, because they're the ones that I find work out quite well, because there's no conflict of interest. They actually just manage property. That's their business. And they tend to do a really good job for you.
That's very sound advice, Lloyd. One of the most important things that I've learned over my career is that where everything typically starts with, in terms of setting yourself up for success, setting yourself up to not have headaches or trouble down the track, is getting the right tenant in the property. That's where I think a good managing agent will probably deliver the most value from the get-go. So you mentioned before, you know, how do they screen their tenants? Another aspect is also, you know, where do they actually attract their tenants from? Is it a database of pre-existing clients? You know, do they have the reach to get your property on all the major web portals? Are they advertising just on social platforms? You know, don't be afraid to ask the question, how do you source your tenants? Where do you get them from? How long have they been? Have they rented previously through your company before? Dig deep, just ask all the important questions.
Absolutely. And it's really important to get references. So have they rented through your company before? But if they haven't, get references from where they've previously rented to make sure that they've actually paid their rent on time. And also get some information around their income and their job security, just to get an understanding of whether they're in a secure job or whether they're just working on a casual basis, whether they're on Centrelink or things like that. And all that just helps you to understand their sources of income and whether they're going to be a stable tenant. And a good property manager should really be doing this, is that when you advertise for tenants, you should get a number of applications, and the property manager should actually put probably three applications through to you, and you can review them, and then they can advise you which one they'd recommend. You can also have a choice there, which tenant that you should put in your property there. I think a few of the other things to ask the tenant as well would be, do you plan on getting any, say, roommates in the future? You know, do you work night shifts or odd hours? Because that could potentially affect your neighbours and things like that. You know, do you smoke? Is something that you could potentially ask. Yeah, if you don't want a smoker inside your property, then you've got every right to mention that. And I think a big one that comes up quite a lot is pets. Now, personally, I actually allow pets in my rental properties because I think that actually opens up to a wider demographic. But you can stipulate what you want. So, you know, you might just want, you know, you allow small dogs, for example, that don't have much hair, or you'll allow a cat, but you don't want big dogs. You know, you can stipulate what you want, and that can be written into the lease. So that any damage needs to be repaired by the tenants and things. But that's just something to think about, so that you're not actually surprised by anything that pops up later on.
Lloyd, one of the small costs, but I prefer to use the term investment, when leasing an investment property is it's your landlord's insurance. Now, I know there are a lot of providers of this service. Within our company, we can provide our landlords with insurance for only a couple hundred dollars, and we've seen many instances where they've actually been really grateful down the track that they've made that investment. How important is it to have an insurance in place?
Well, it's actually really important, for a few reasons. Full landlord's insurance actually covers the insurance on your property and also insurance for loss of rent. So just breaking that down, for your actual property. So if you've got a house, for example, then you should have building insurance on it anyway. If it's in an apartment or a townhouse that's a strata building, then while you won't have necessarily building insurance, you'll have the strata insurance that'll actually cover that. Then you should just have insurance that'll actually cover the internal. So it'll be like landlord's insurance that will cover any damage that is caused inside the other property. But also landlord's insurance to cover loss of rent, potentially if the if the tenants sort of clear out and things like that, and haven't paid you some rent and things like that. Although you've paid a bond, that's not really going to cover everything. So just having some insurance in place there is very important to just to mitigate yourself from being too much out of risk. Again, the cost of landlord's insurance it pales into insignificance in terms of what it can potentially save you. But again, it's just a cost of doing business, and having a property portfolio is business. And again, it's tax deductible.
And I suppose that ties in with my point earlier, which is that, once again, really important to get the right tenant in, because then that minimizes the need for, insurances. We're not saying not to forego insurance, but it just means that you're probably not going to have to be relying on just waiting for things to go wrong all the time.
Yeah, that's very true, Alex. And that comes down to, a few things. And I always talk about sort of buying in the right areas. So, buying an area that's not necessarily something that's going to be attracting bad tenants, so to speak. But there's another thing that often crops up, and that is, I often talk about buying close to, universities or in areas that are driven by universities. And then, people sort of ask me about, what's the student demand of this area going to be like in the future? And then I realize we're actually on two different pages here, because I never think about renting my properties to students. The fact that I want to rent close to a or have a property close to a university is actually so that the lecturers at the university can actually, rent my property, not the students. So it's not about having students living in your property. You've got a nice rental property. You actually want people like, doctors, nurses, if you need the hospital or if you need the university, have the lecturers there, or if you need schools, have teachers there. So they're the type of people I've got renting my properties. So again, and they're quality, they're professionals. You've got teachers, police officers, doctors, nurses, those kind of people renting your properties, they're quality people. They're the kind of people that you want to have in your properties that will mitigate you against, potential damages and stuff.
Every investor, Lloyd, at some point throughout their investing career will inevitably be at a point where they do need to conduct repairs on a property, whether it's, real minor superficial improvements or repairs to a property from a light fitting to a door handle. What do you recommend in terms of how to deal with that? I know that, for example, it's really important to have that critical conversation with your property manager and define, for example, okay, this is a set amount that we're happy for you to go ahead without calling me up to get fixed. How do you normally handle that?
Yeah, look, normally you have it in the lease where you might agree to $500 or so being a set amount that they can have fixed without calling you up, particularly if it's the middle of the night or it's an emergency, you need to call a plumber out or something like that. I think that's really important. If it's a major issue, that's going to be a couple of $1,000, and obviously they should get a quote, and probably, I'd ask for three quotes and things like that if it's going to be a major repair like that. But you definitely need to give your property manager some leeway to be able to just get some stuff fixed, and particularly if it's a broken door handle or a leaking tap, just get someone out there. My property managers, however, still call me up and say, the tenant has an issue with this, can I call someone out to look at it? And although it might only end up being a call-out fee of $150 or something, the property manager will still call me up and ask me about it anyway, because it's the sort of relationship that I've built up with the property managers. So that's very important. The other bit of advice that I would have here is that it's very important to look after your tenants. So don't skimp on repairs. If something's not right in your property, make sure you fix it, because you want to keep your tenants happy for the long term. Because if something isn't right in your property, then they'll probably end up wanting to move out. And then you're going to have to fix that before your next tenants move in anyway. But if you are looking after your tenants long term, then they'll look after the place in return, hopefully. And they'll be good long term tenants. And I've got some of my properties that I've had for years, and I may have only had one or two changes in tenancy that whole time. So that's really important. I mean, I even go to the extent where I actually send Christmas cards to my tenants, and they haven't even met me. I just send them a Christmas card, sort of just, from myself as the landlord, and just say, hope you're Merry Christmas. Hope you've enjoyed living here and, whatever. But, little touches like that is always nice as well.
Absolutely. And I think just touching on repairs, something that I've also seen over the years is that, you know, it's really important as a landlord, sometimes you just need to fix things properly.
Yeah.
No band-aid effect fixes.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that, and that comes down to sometimes, you know, people want to self-manage their properties and just want to go around and sort of fix something to save costs. But I really just urge people to just treat it as a business, get professionals in there. If you are a tradesperson yourself and you can effectively do that, then by all means do that. That's perfectly fine. It's just like some of the properties that we buy for clients and our client actually is a builder, then they can renovate the properties themselves. Then, you know, we don't need to arrange a builder for them. But, you know, if you're not an expert in that field, just get an expert in to fix it because that's really important. Yeah, as you say, Alex, no band-aid fixes. Just make sure that you fix the problem so it's not going to happen again for them.
Lloyd, one of the most often misunderstood parts of being a landlord is what you can and can't claim to reduce your taxable income. There's actually a lot of benefits being a landlord in terms of what you can deduct. You know, the most obvious one is management fees, for example, partially renovations to property, all of the associated costs with getting your investment property advertised and out there is all an expense which is tax deductible. Are there any particular ones that you wanted to cover off on that, you know, some people that are new to investing might not be quite aware of?
Yeah, so Alex, there's quite a few things that we can probably just cover off. So obviously the property management fees, which is the percentage of the fees that you're paying to your property manager, are claimable and they're actually deductible in the year that they occurred. You can also claim maintenance cost, but you can't claim improvements or enhancements on your property. So maintenance costs are simply, as we referred to before, if you need to call the plumber in, you know, you've got a broken door handle that you need repaired, then they can be deductible in the year that occurred. If you're doing some renovations, for example, then they're only claimable as capital works, not actually in the year that they're claimed. Interest, however, is a very important thing on an investment property, which is obviously claimed in the year that those expenses were incurred. Advertising, obviously, for tenants, which is all part of the whole property manager thing, obviously, again, can be claimed on your tax. If you've got body corporate fees on your property, then same thing, they can be deducted in that year. For all your other outgoings, because often you know people are concerned when you've got a investment property that you're obviously paying council rates and you're paying water rates and potentially if you've got a few properties, you might be paying land tax as well, then you've got to pay those outgoings, but they're all deductible in the year that they are incurred as well. Other maintenance costs, if you are getting someone else to come in and look after the property, such as, you know, gardening and lawn mowing, we can certainly get that claimed as on tax as well. So quite often, when you've got tenants in your property, they'll quite often look after the gardens themselves, that there might be times where you actually just arrange for someone to come in and look after that, or might be in between tenancies and you need to get your property maintained before the new tenants move in which case you would need to get a gardener to come in and maintain things there. So that's obviously very important. With the whole thing about the landlord's insurance that we were talking about before, that's obviously another thing that's actually claimed on tax as well.
For people who are buying a property off the plan as part of an investment portfolio, and probably at the moment it's not something that a lot of people are doing, in my experience anyway. So what they're able to do is obviously depreciate the improvements of that property from brand new. For people who are buying existing dwellings that are already established, they're also able to get a quantity surveyor in, which we've touched on in a previous episode, whereby you can actually have everything valued in the property and use that as part of a tax depreciation schedule, which has some benefits also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that's I think that's the thing that a lot of people actually don't realise. In fact, there's about I was looking at something from the ATO recently, and there's about 75% of Australian property investors who actually don't realise that they can be using a depreciation schedule on their property. So they're actually leaving money on the table there. You can get a lot of money back there, a lot of tax back. So yeah, that's something to really consider. And it's not just, you know, in brand new properties and things like that. You can actually depreciate a property over a 40-year lifespan. Now, the best part of that depreciation is over the first 5 to 10 years of the property. However, it's still valid up to 40 years. So that's something to, yeah, worthy of noting. The other thing also, if you end up, say, renovating a property, so even as an older property, older than 40 years, but you renovate the property, then you can actually depreciate those renovations as well. So that's very, you know, that's something that a lot of people probably don't consider. So, you know, certainly get the advice, you know, from your accountant and stuff too when you're, you know, working in all this into your equation. But there's a lot of things here that are great benefits to yourself as a property investor and can really help your cash flow. And this comes back to a positively geared property because quite often, you know, people sort of can have a positively geared property after tax. And that essentially means that it may be a bit cash flow negative before their tax return. But once they claim everything and they've got the depreciation schedule in place, they get a bit of money back. They'll end up having a positively geared property, which is essentially the true meaning of positively geared is it actually is exactly that after it's cash flow positive after tax. The ultimate goal is having a cash flow positive property before tax. That's what we should all be aiming for. But certainly if we can do all these tax deductions and then end up with cash flow positive property and get a good handy tax return, then that's going to really help you out as well. And that's going to help you out as you move towards further property purchases because you've got more money to play with, more equity.
Absolutely. And it's, once again, it's having a proactive property manager that a lot of the good ones, in my experience, they've got contacts in those fields, so they can actually help facilitate when you first introduce your property to them, getting the depreciation schedule drawn up, Lloyd. And obviously everything you've just touched on, you know, is also part of that dream team that we discuss is having a great accountant, which can help you with, you know, making sure that you're getting every deduction possible, and they can give you some further advice around what we've just touched on.
Yeah, that's very true, Alex. So I actually think that a quantity surveyor who does the depreciation report should actually be part of your dream team, because for each property you buy, you can actually have the one company that then can do a depreciation report no matter where your properties are located. So especially if they've got, you know, obviously different franchises in different localities and things. One of the good things about a property manager is that they often have the contacts for tradespersons and they should have as well. So when you've got a property and it does need some repairs or even potentially some renovations, a good property manager will be able to get the right people in to give quotes and do that work for you.
The other important benefit, Lloyd, when appointing a managing agent is that you get the benefit of their experience. So beyond appointing a good tenant, you know, having the property well advertised to attract good quality tenants, and you know, obviously the benefits, you know, we've touched on the taxation benefits, we've touched on the fact that it frees your time up to do other things that can possibly produce you more income to buy more properties, which is always the goal. Having a really experienced managing agent comes in handy if you do, on that unlikely event, need to go to tenancy tribunal. It's not something you want to be doing as an individual in terms of putting together a case and getting stuck in a sticky situation, is it?
No, absolutely not. And that's really the last resort. And a good property manager will try to find other ways to obviously sort things out. I mean, if you've got a tenant that you're having a few issues with, then the property manager will try to work through those issues. And whether they're a difficult tenant because they're causing issues in the property or whether they're late paying rent, then the property manager will sort out those kind of things. Going to the tribunal is really the last step. But if you do, you don't want to be the one having to put that case together because that is, you know, a nightmare really, and would take a lot of your time. So you need someone who's got that experience to do that. A lot of the time, those kind of things can actually end up benefiting the tenant more than you as the landlord. So there are better steps that we need to take before we actually get to that point. But initially, it really comes back to having the right tenant. But even before that, buying the right property in the right location. And this is where I really stress. Don't just try to buy in sort of the cheapest location thinking you're going to get a really good deal and then you'll end up a less than superb tenant because that can have an on-flow effect. So it really comes back to making sure that you're setting your portfolio up with a good asset base of residential properties that are going to actually perform well for you. They're not going to perform well if you don't have cash coming out of those properties through good tenants paying you good rent.
Absolutely. It's very true. And I guess it all ties in with, you know, because there are so many moving parts in property investing and property ownership, everything sort of ties into one and the other. Once again, you know, we always talk about strategy. It's the same concept really, isn't it? It's having a strategy towards getting the right people in the right place. And then everything from there is a lot easier to build on.
Absolutely. And like I always say, it's all about education. So you really need to learn. There's so many moving parts. You really need to learn everything about what you're doing, but get some, you know, get some advice, get some mentoring, you know, do lots of reading. And that's one of the reasons why I put out my book, Positively Geared, and tried to cover a lot of these issues in there, just so that people can get some comfort around all that, you know, before they proceed with their own purchases, just so they can be sure that on how to make the right decisions.
Lloyd, a lot of people are driven by, you know, the decision-making is driven by trying to find the cheapest, whether it's a selling agent or a managing agent for a property. We just really want to reinforce today that it's important to get the right team behind you. I mean, no, it's no different to a dream team. You wouldn't hire a bad accountant just because he's, you know, $200 cheaper for a consultancy session with him. And I think that it's no different with appointing a managing agent. What do you think's a fair or reasonable fee in the market today to pay for a managing agent in Sydney, for example?
Okay, so in Sydney, I think probably a pretty fair fee to be paying would probably be around about the 5.5 to 6%. Sure, there's some that are cheaper than that, and there may be some a little bit more expensive than that. So the ones that are a bit more expensive than that, that doesn't actually mean that they're, you know, too overpriced, because you need to look at the overall package. What do they charge if you go to the tribunal? Most charge, you know, per hour, for example. What do they charge for putting out statements per month and things like that? So some actually have it all inclusive. Others will charge a cheaper per month commission, but then have these extra charges. So you actually need to look at things overall. Agencies that sort of charge, you know, 4% seems very reasonable, but then they're not necessarily going to be the best agents for your property. So you just need to make sure that you do proper due diligence there and you know, come to an understanding of why they're cheap, and is it because they've got low overheads? Do they have a mobile office? Yeah, are they really able to manage your property adequately? What I can say is that, you know, it's a very competitive market in Sydney, and of course with property prices being higher in Sydney than anywhere else in the country, the percentage is generally a bit lower because the property managers are still going to get good fees out of it. So for example, if you've got investment properties in Brisbane, then you'd be likely to be paying around 8%, so anywhere between 7 to 9%. And that can be the case in regional areas as well, such as Newcastle, for example, much higher than what you would pay in Sydney. So you need to sort of look at the city as an average. But yeah, if you're looking around about between the 5 to 6% and then sort of looking around that, that's a sort of a good ballpark.
Lloyd, in your book, Positively Geared, you also refer to smoke alarms as an essential part of the landlord toolkit.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. So I just thought, yeah, we could probably briefly touch on that now, because it is the responsibility of every landlord to ensure that you do have smoke alarms, you know, fitted within your property, because there is legislation behind that. And it's also important to make sure that you replace the batteries before, you know, any new tenants move in. I think that's very important. There is a couple of points, I guess, to note that during tenancy, it's actually the tenant's responsibility to replace the batteries. So they've actually got to make sure that the smoke alarms keep working during the time that they're living there. But if your smoke alarm is faulty, then that's actually the responsibility of you as the property owner to get it repaired or replaced. So again, that comes back, and that's certainly something you don't want to ignore if your property manager calls you and says, we've got a problem with the smoke alarm, can I get it fixed? You should not be delaying that, because we know what possible ramifications that might have. And of course, there are plenty of companies around that actually specialise specifically in smoke alarm maintenance, and that's something that your property manager, that they would have a list of those sort of companies and can certainly organise that for you, and that's part of their job.
Particularly with insurances, you know, you don't want to put yourself in a position where they come in after the fact and say, okay, well, we've just seen your smoke alarm's not working, therefore we're not going to cover you for XYZ.
Absolutely. And it's also very important, Alex, that you understand what sort of smoke alarm you've got. So whether it's hardwired or whether it's just battery operated, because that's going to be one of the questions most likely on your insurance application that you're filling out.
We hope that everybody listening today has taken away a few really key points in terms of what to look for in a managing agent, transitioning from homeowner to landlord and learning all of these key skills. Lloyd, you cover off on a lot of this in much greater detail in your book, Positively Geared.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in my book, we just try to cover off on everything there just to give people as much education as possible around buying properties and property investing and all the different strategies. But certainly with landlords and property management, it's very important there, because once you've got a property and you're buying a property with a strategy to create income from it, create cash flow from it, then actually having it managed correctly and bringing in that rent is actually just as important as the property acquisition itself. So that's actually a very important aspect to be looking at there. And I hope everybody can really consider the things that we've spoken about today, both for their future purchases and also for any of the properties that they've currently got. And might be a good time for people to start reviewing where they currently are and whether they need to have a look at their current property managers and what their properties are doing at the moment.
Thanks so much for your time, Lloyd.
Thanks, Alex.